Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last month, the South Dakota Air and Space Museum announced an event that brings awareness to a historic World War II mission that crosses the state and involves teachers and history students. Next week's raid across South Dakota honors the famous Doolittle Raid and the two South Dakotans, Henry Potter and Don Smith, who took part in it. The story has taken on heightened meaning as the last surviving member of the Doolittle Raid of 1942, his name is Dick Cole, died Tuesday at the age of 103 at the Brooke Army Medical Center in Houston, Texas. With more on the raid across South Dakota, we welcome today Kim Morey. He's president of the South Dakota Air and Space Museum. Mr. Morey, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Also joining us in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls studio, cinematographer Dalton Coffey. Dalton is a cameraman, editor, and music scorer with the production Old Guys and Their Airplanes. Dalton, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kim, let's start with you and give people an idea of just what a big production this raid across South Dakota is, because it involves the actual flying of an actual B-25 bomber.
Yes, it does. I can go briefly to the genesis of the whole project, which is that the units that are now stationed at Ellsworth Air Force Base flying the B-1 bombers, and one of the units that's flying one of the drones that are currently operational are direct descendants of the squadrons that flew the Doolittle Raid. And the squadron, or the wing at the base, had planned to do a commemorative event for the raid, which occurred on April 18th, 1942. And as the Air and Space Foundation is tightly connected to the base and the history is a primary focus of ours, they approached us for assistance. And to avoid going into too long of a story, we at the museums have developed a connection with Old Guys and Their Airplanes, because their mission is very similar to ours, to keep the history of military aviation alive. So when they approached us, the first thought that came to mind is, well, I wonder if we could get a B-25 to fly in here. We knew that they were flyable, and we knew some people in that flying business. And so we reached out to some people that we know that do maintain and fly these vintage aircraft, and were able to strike an arrangement with the Minnesota wing of the Commemorative Air Force to fly their B-25 Miss Mitchell to the inn for the event at Ellsworth on the 18th. Now, of course, to do that from Minnesota to Rapid City, you have to fly across the whole state. So with that thought in mind, we thought, well, Ellsworth and the South Dakota Air and Space Museum are state assets, and let's involve the entire state. And so the flight was planned with stops in Sioux Falls, Mitchell Pier, and Rapid City before the airplane goes on to Ellsworth for the official military commemoration of the event. So let's just say that it started with a little idea and it got pretty big.
It got pretty big pretty fast. And Dalton Coffey, I want to bring you into the conversation as well, because it's your job to sort of capture this as it happens, make art and history out of it at the same time. Tell us about your role.
Well, I'm hired as, I'm part of the Old Guys in the Airplanes team, and I do a lot of shooting and a lot of editing, and as you mentioned earlier, some music and stuff. And this is really, I have a love and passion for cinematography and telling visual stories, and I have a love and passion for history, specifically World War II. So this is my role here is to try to bring those two things together and capture this moment as best we can, and all the stops, and just to show, the interaction between the living history part, and then actually try to package this together and put it together. And also, the big thing is to show the importance of the South Dakota Air and Space Museum and its validity here. And So yeah, to try to, a lot of it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's journalism at some level, and I come from a more scripted narrative background. So this is somewhat newish territory for me. So to kind of capture the story as it goes and see what we get.
Right. Documentary filmmaking as it happens with just a tiny bit of pressure.
A tiny bit.
It's not like you can take the flight again. Tell us
no.
a little bit about setting up, you know, the equipment, the gear, so many variables and challenges, really. You'll be on the aircraft.
Correct. And so trying to figure out what cameras to use, what lenses to use, how many cameras do we need, where can I put them. There's a lot of stuff I don't even know yet. And there's a lot of, you know, there's space issues. There are a lot of restrictions that I'm sure I'll learn about even more of them once we get going with it. So there's a lot I don't know. And there's, you know, I guess there was a lot that, you know, the original guys didn't know when they were doing the real thing, too. So I can't complain about what my role here is.
You know that you'll land safely. And
I believe so, yes.
You'll have work to do.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that.
Whereas, and Kim, tell us a little bit about that original Doolittle raid, because there was a high risk element and lots of uncertainty. Not everybody came back. Tell us a little bit about the mission.
Well, yeah, it was historical in many ways. We would start with the fact that this was the first time any aircraft of anywhere near this size was even attempted to be launched from an aircraft carrier. And the aircraft carrier operations themselves were relatively new, and here we were putting an aircraft that was normally meant to take off in a quarter or a half a mile or so, and you know, their normal takeoff roll, like it would, to put it in feet, would be maybe 1,500 feet, and now they had to figure out how to get the airplane off of the ground or off of the deck of an aircraft carrier in 500 feet, and they were flying airplanes at that time. Of course, aerial refueling hadn't been invented yet. They were flying heavily modified aircraft so that they could get off of the aircraft carrier deck into their targets. But when they left the carrier, they knew that they would not be landing on the carrier. They knew that they would fly their mission and drop their bombs on the cities in Japan, and not if everything worked out properly, they would be able to fly into the unoccupied parts of China and land there and then work their way home. And in fact, all of the Doolittle Raiders didn't make it. Some did crash in Japan or Japanese-occupied areas, and some died from their wounds from the accident. Some were executed. And the courage to do this under the best of conditions was just amazing. And one other point that makes it very different is this raid occurred in April of 1942. Pearl Harbor happened in December of 1941. So there were just a little more than 4 months to come up with a plan to do something that had never been done before and successfully execute it. So it's just an amazing thing. And the one piece that really connects us to South Dakota is the fact that South Dakota has always been a very small state population-wise, yet we seem to have outsized representation in these kinds of events. Like, as you had mentioned, there were two South Dakotans that were on this raid, and there were only 80 Americans that were on the raid. So one in 40 of the raiders were from South Dakota, when proportionally there might have been none. So it's a very impressive in the terms of the raid itself, and it's the technology that it developed, the known danger going in, and the fact that South Dakota was so highly represented. It's just an amazing story.
And Dalton, from a storyteller's perspective, and I should tell listeners that they can also hear our conversation about this topic with John Mollison, who's the host of Old Guys and Their Airplanes, on our website, listen.sdpb.org. And he had interviewed Dick Cole, who was the last living surviving member of the Doolittle Raid, who just died this week. So when you look at, you know, your interest in history and your interest as a storyteller and documentary filmmaker in this case, it takes on a certain added meaning to know that the people who can tell these stories firsthand are now officially gone.
Correct. Yeah, that was, I didn't personally meet Dick. But I felt, I don't want to sound cliche or say something out of line, but I really felt connected and largely because of this and for, you know, a few other reasons. But yeah, it feels like, to me anyway, personally, the flight takes on a little bit of a different meaning now. I mean, we can dedicate it to Dick. We can dedicate it to all the rest, to the South Dakotans that flew. And yeah, it's they're going, and they're going fast. And the end of an era is what I've been hearing everybody keep saying about the Raiders, and they're all gone now. I would have loved to have been able to share whatever we get with Dick, but you know he made it to 103. He did well. He did very well. Yeah. So true American hero.
And Kim, tell us a little bit about the, you know, you mentioned, you know, how soon after the attack on Pearl Harbor, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, and then in April of 1942, this raid is launched on Imperial Japan. What is the sort of larger significance beyond the military strategy and you know targets that were being taken out? There's something else going on with what we have to say about American military might at this moment, isn't there?
Sure, there is. And every account of the Doolittle Raid, the 30 seconds over Tokyo, first heroes, the many books that have been written about that, all of them acknowledge the fact that tactically, from a military damage perspective, I believe it was Craig Nelson's book, First Heroes, that referred to it as barely more than a mosquito bite to the Imperial Japan at the time. But that doesn't pay attention to the fact that the Japanese people and the American people all had the impression from what had been going on. The Japanese had been marching across the Pacific with success after success, and they had occupied a tremendous amount of China, and they had defeated British forces and Chinese forces and American forces, and they just appeared to be invincible. And so when the Japanese people woke up to bombs exploding in their cities, and the American people woke up to the news that America had bombed the heartland of Japan, it was not having been there, I can't really say for myself, but I can feel the importance of that kind of news. It was a huge boost for American morale, and it really set the Japanese back on their heels. As I alluded to earlier, the few unfortunate raiders that did end up in the Japanese hands suffered mightily for having, in essence, just opened their eyes and said, "You're not so special as you think you are." So the impact, while it might be a firecracker going off in a large building, the impact on the morale and the arrogance of an enemy was just unmeasurable, and therefore made this one of the things that happened in World War II, of all of the many heroic actions that happened, this really stands out as a very special event.
And Kim, we've used the word hero a couple times during this segment, and then also talked about the really the personal suffering of people and what they went through. You have, of course, your own history as a tail gunner during the Vietnam War and combat missions over Hanoi. When you look at something like the Doolittle Raid and you do your work for the Air and Space Museum, and you think back to your own time in combat, and you see this sort of this flying classroom going and telling students across the state of South Dakota, tell me a little bit about what that means to you as a combat veteran.
Well, I think probably I would like to first say that I've known many people that rightfully are called heroes, and all of those people that I've known, at least known and liked, don't like, I don't want to say don't like being called heroes, but we shy away from that a bit.
Yeah.
So. And that's a point that's very well made in this book, is that I believe and I'm referring to the first Heroes book, but most people who are involved in events like that, like the one that I was involved there, my experience as a combat veteran as a B-52 gunner, are we're just ordinary people. We just happen to get thrust into some extraordinary events, and so it is that illustrates a connection that runs through time. I have been, because of my age, I entered the military in 1971 and was more or less randomly selected. I didn't ask for it. It just came to me that I was picked to be trained as a gunner on B-52s. It was like one out of 15 or 20,000 enlistees at the time, and I was one that I put it at my third choice of something I wanted to do, and it just happened. It was kind of an odd thing. But to get to my point, my instructors, when I was a young gunner in the early 70s, were all World War II veterans. And those World War II veterans were all trained and inspired by World War I veterans. So in a kind of a fact, a way of looking at this as connections and timing, that Jimmy Doolittle and who was a lieutenant colonel in his 40s at the time of the raid, he was a first-generation flyer and first-generation combat flyer. Airplanes were not common when Jimmy Doolittle was a little boy. And so Jimmy Doolittle inspired the gunners who inspired me. And hopefully we can continue to make that connection we are... As a human race, we are an ongoing process, and we have history that both informs us and inspires us. And if we can bring, instead of a story, but an actual airplane from that era, we can get a much better feel of what that experience was for these ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I know I'm going on a lot, Lori, but I want to make one other comment that is it's just really an unusual thing, and these things just seem to happen here and there. In 1981, I had spent 10 years as an enlisted man and decided to take an opportunity to get a commission. And when I went to officer training school, my roommate was Jimmy Doolittle III in officer training school. And his grandfather came to visit him, and he and I were able to, he saw the decorations that I wore and asked me about them. And we were able to have a really nice connection, a first generation combat flyer to a third generation combat flyer. And that's a moment that's just amazing and incredibly unexpected that I would, in 1981, be talking to the man that we are honoring with this event that we're doing in 2019. So just kind of an incredible thing. And the connections are just so important to continue on as a well-informed and educated group of people.
More opportunities to study that history with the raid of across South Dakota, which kicks off next week. My guests have been Kim Morey, president of the South Dakota Air and Space Museum. Kim, thank you so much for that story. Thank you for your service.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you for putting us on the air today.
Also joining us today has been Dalton Coffey, cameraman, music composer, editor for Old Guys and Their Airplanes. Enjoy the ride, Dalton, and we look forward to seeing what we can see after the story of what you put together.
Thank you very much for having me. Look forward to sharing it.